Friends Podcast.
Hi, I'm Diane Hunt. I'm an impressionist realist painter connecting with nature through my brush. I work in oil paint and watercolor, and I live in the countryside of Maryland's Eastern Shore, not far from the Chesapeake Bay. You can find me online at dianehuntstudio.com. and on Facebook and Instagram at Diane Hunt Studio.
Hi, I'm Constance Brosnan of Steve Brosnan's Jewelry Designs. I live in Oklahoma on a prairie, and I make handmade jewelry in silver, copper, and brass. I'm an artist that paints. I paint pastels and in oil sometimes.
Hello, this is Bob J. Kale. I'm the host of this podcast. I am a emerging representational artist. I do historic renderings, seascapes, landscapes, botanicals, birds, and whatnot, with a tight illustrative hand in watercolor, pen and ink, and acrylic paints. And I live in Oklahoma City. Hello, this is Clyde J. Kale, and once again, you are listening to the Artist Friends Podcast, episode 154 for July the 4th, 2022. And I'm here with my two best artist friends, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson. Hello, Diane.
Hi, Clyde. Hi, Constance. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Constance.
Hi, Clyde. Hi, Diane. Hello, everybody.
Happy 4th of July.
Yeah.
You guys got any fireworks going off or anything like that?
Not yet. There probably will be all over the place here.
Yeah. Yeah, I expect.
Usually all I have to do is stand around outside and watch because it's all the way around us. It's one thing about living in a prairie. There's not a lot of trees, so you can see a long way off.
Yeah, they had some out here last night. I could hear in the distance. The boom, 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 you know, whatever. And I didn't go outside and look, but there was a park nearby where they shoot them off every year, you know. And but I didn't, unlike in the past, usually in the past, my neighbors would fireworks off, you know, in the apartment complex. And that's, you know, that's illegal according to the Midwest City law, you know, you're not supposed to shoot fireworks inside the town, inside the city. And this year I didn't hear any at all. Of course, that's not counting tonight. We'll see what happens. You know?
Yeah. The first year that we lived here, we got chairs and went to the roof and sat on the roof and watched the fireworks from everywhere around here. It was fun.
Yeah. Well, for our listeners, if you go to www.talkartpodcast.com, talkartpodcast.com, I selected some videos there of the unsung heroes of illustration, and we might talk about them, but we might not. It's just, we're just talking about 4th of July and some of our memories of 4th of July celebrations, and maybe a little bit of bantering back and forth, and you know, basically just artist chat, you know, friends talking and enjoying each other's company, because I almost canceled today with it being a holiday, but then I know that Diane and Constance, kind of like me, we don't have any place to go, we don't have much of a life. Yeah, our work. Diane, especially, Diane, so tell us how many, I know you have a kennel and you have a farm. How many animals do you have in that kennel now?
There's this weekend, there's been about, I think there's around 20 or 25 dogs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Few cats. And then we have all the farm animals.
Oh, wow. Yep. Oh, and speaking of farm animals. Okay. You know, on YouTube, there's all kinds of videos, things. And what I like occasionally, I'll sit back and I'll watch Warner Brothers cartoons, you know, Daffy Duck and Bugs Bunny, whatever. They're put them in like a 3-hour run. You know, you just sit there, you just let them play one after the other. There was one cartoon on there where they had a goat. Okay. And I've always heard this before, and I immediately, it made me think of Diane, because I know Diane has goats. This goat was eating everything. Is that a myth, or do goats eat everything?
They don't eat everything. They're actually pretty picky eaters. I don't know where that came from, but I know they do like the glue that used to be on the labels on, and they'll eat paper. So that's usually, I mean, that's where, but some of that came from. They used to chew on the cans to get the labels off and eat the glue and the paper. But they're really pretty picky as far as vegetation and stuff.
Yeah, because this cartoon goat was eating everything. He was eating tin cans. He was eating.
Yeah, they don't eat tin cans.
Ammunition. He was eating everything. Yeah.
They had one on Andy Griffith one time that went. They said that he probably ate the dynamite in one of the doors. Somebody behind the store left the door open to the dynamite cabinet. So. They took him out of town.
The babies do like to taste everything. Like they'll you know, chew on your clothes and, you know, your fingers and stuff when they're little. The little guys, they check out stuff by tasting it, I guess.
Yeah. But, so that's where that myth kind of came from then.
Yeah. Yeah.
They ate everything. Because when I was watching this, immediately, you know, Diane, yeah, you popped in my head. I'm going to ask about her goats. Yeah.
Yeah, they will eat like poison ivy and those briars and things like that, though, which most animals stay away from, but they like that.
It don't hurt them? It don't affect them? Or
No, doesn't bother them at all. It bothers us when they get in the poison ivy, though, because then if you pet them or something, you get the poison ivy oil on you. And,
yeah.
You know, if you're allergic to it, it'll break your skin.
Yeah, I am.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
I would be in trouble then if they ate that. Because
have toxic goats. Huh?
Yeah, I'm not allergic to it, but my sister's very allergic, and she'd pet him or something and get that oil on him, or she'd just break out everywhere. And she's like, I never see him in the woods. I didn't get near them. Yeah, but she'd be all broken out.
Out in California, I don't know what kind of strain of poison sumac or oak or whatever they had out there, but I was helping the family clean some brush somewhere at a house. And the next day I was scratching myself all over. I mean, I had big welts. That's how bad I get. I had to go to the doctor and they gave me a steroid shot. And then I had to take steroid medicine to get rid of it after that, because I was miserable. Breakout. I'm very allergic to poison ivy and oak, anything like that. It's just a mess.
Wow. Well, for our listeners, another reason why I came up with the idea of this, I've been really fascinated, and I've been watching a lot of the videos from the live videos from the virtual instructor, the virtualinstructor.com. And these are two art teachers. And it is so, every Wednesday they have a couple live sessions, and they are just so enjoyable. The two guys, you could tell, are good friends, and one guy's usually working on the art and the other guy's is handling the chat, and they're answering chat questions and they're talking about art, but they talk about everything else. Like, I'm sure if someone brought up something about poison ivy, they would go off on a banter about poison ivy for 20 minutes. And there was one episode where they were working on a drawing of an octopus, and they could not come up with the They now, is it called octopus or octopi?
Octopi, yeah.
We're discussing that for like 30 minutes. Yeah. And then they couldn't figure out what are those tentacles or in, you know, the different parts of the. But it was very, very entertaining, very enjoyable. You learn. And it reminded me of us, because a lot of times, you know, we don't record everything. Folks, we meet here for about an hour, sometimes an hour and a half, and we talk about everything under the sun, but we only record about 20 minutes or 30 minutes that are focused on the theme of the, you know, the video, but we talk about everything else. And I thought tonight we'll kind of do a combination, see if our listeners enjoy some of our bantering, you know, and other things like, oh, Constance will get on a subject about her chickens. By the way, Constance, how are the chickens doing?
Well, we only have two hens that are laying right now. One's got three little bitties with her, so she hatched out three chicks. The other one, I had to chase her until 10 o'clock last night trying to make her get in the box so nothing would eat her. But then the day I went up, after taking care of the little ones, we had bought 17 chicks at a sale. And then I went and checked the incubator, and we had a little guinea that hatched, the pie. We call it a pie. It's a two color. So we call it, it's a pie. It's a white and I think purple necked guinea. But we like to have guineas here to eat the bugs. Do you guys still have guineas, Diane?
Yeah, we have about, I think there's about 30 out there maybe.
We try to have that many, but we have to be careful, you know, because we have coyotes in there for a long time. We had a bobcat in the area, and it just cleaned us out every time we got a good group of them together. But now we've got them trained so that they roost in the rafters of the carport. It's like a three-car carport. So once the guineas roost up there, they tried roosting on top of it. But then, you know, when there was a bad storm, it was kind of rough, which it can be here in Oklahoma. So then they started going up in the rafters of the carport, and that's where they stay. So we have been able to keep them all since then. Unless something gets a hold of them during the day while they're on the ground, they do pretty good.
Yeah, we have fox here mostly, but and we lose a few now and then to the foxes, but that's about it, I guess.
Well, I saw a picture on Facebook, Constance, where somebody had taken those paper containers for cupcakes that you make cupcakes with and poked a hole on them and put them on the little baby chicks where it looked like.
Yeah, like a little dress.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah. Kept wanting you to do that since you got chicks. You got to do it.
They're a little bit too big to do that too right now, but if we get some little bitty ones, you'll have to remind me the next time I tell you I've gotten those little, you know, when they're a few days old, that's when you do it. Right now, they would probably go bonkers if I tried to do something like that to them, because they're like, you know, they're probably
a collar
instead of a dress.
They're that big now. All right.
They probably freak out, especially the guineas. Guineas don't like to be messed with to begin with.
Yeah.
What are you doing to me?
Yeah. Yeah. Chickens, you can tame them pretty easily, but guineas, they don't, they just, they have a personality of like, don't touch me. Don't even come near me. I don't want to be touched.
So this is the Artist Friends Podcast. By the way, that's a reminder, our listeners, you are listening to the Artist Friends Podcast. not Farm Week, but hey.
Yeah. We are artists, but we have other interests.
Yeah, we do.
So are you? Did you two get a chance to work on any art this week? Or did your...
I didn't work on any art per se, but I'm trying to learn how to do... video editing, so I was working on that this week. Wow. Again, it's taken me a while. I have to learn all the little, you know, the tools and how to manipulate things and all that. It's a little time consuming learning all that.
Yep. And you seem to be allergic to electronics or technical. So
well, I'm not allergic to it, but I think it's allergic to me.
Stories about how watches working on you and
I do have trouble with electronic things for sure.
That's bad.
My electricity just doesn't mesh with electronics a lot of times.
I do remember our guest last week who talked about the mini art show, the mini art show.com. Mm-hmm. And I took advantage. I placed my order for the what's called the basic kit, the 20 pieces of 3x3 inch paper, and with the instructions and the self address envelope and everything. And so that should be coming sometime this week, because I got an email confirmation that they've shipped it. So I'm curious to see what I can do with that.
Yeah, I want to try it too, but I didn't have time this week. I'll have to wait till after the holidays over with.
I've just got so much going on. I just forgot totally about it after I shut the computer off. It was like poof. It was, and so I'm taking care of this place by myself, and then Will's in the hospital. So,
like Bridget said, you don't. They send you 20 pieces. You don't have to send all 20 back, but it's a nice start. I could, see how much I can do. And, there's no time limit except for like a quarterly. I think it's she said that's a quarterly limit, but, anyhow, I'll be probably in one of our future podcasts, maybe in discussing how, I'll share with you what the paperwork is all about and everything that she talked about, and see how easy it is. And, I fully intend to, sign off my share, payment share, to the charity. I think that's a really, I just liked that. I was very fascinated with that, And in my case, what I was thinking about, the originals that I send back will be sold through the mini art show, but I'll go ahead and photograph, get a decent photograph of each art piece, and I'll put it up on my Fine Art America site so that people could order prints, and whatnot. So, and then put in the comment section, put that, originals are available exclusively from Mini Art to give them some more publicity. Cause I really think that's a good operation. That's a good idea. They've got there. So I'm really looking forward to trying my hand out, at this mini art postage stamp style art. See how that comes about. Before we share some of our favorite 4th of July stories, did you get a chance to look at or look over the recommended videos for the unsung heroes of illustration?
I did. I was amazed that there was so many really good artists that are in illustration that you don't know anything about. Like, and I get to thinking about all the illustrators, I had thousands of children's books and stuff. And I remember the photos. I remember the drawings and the paintings that were in those books, but I don't know who they were done by. It was not information that you learned as a kid, I guess.
Because when I think of illustrators, I think of James Montgomery Flagg and Charles Gibbons and a few and of course then later on Norman Rockwell. Magazines and newspapers, they had illustrators,
they didn't have computers to make all that stuff before. Like the old Westerns, all of those pictures you see at the first of the show of the cowboys and stuff, that was all illustrated. And a lot of times the illustrators set the mood for the movies and stuff with their artwork, which I didn't watch those things, but I do know that much. Don't really know their names,
Talking about, they call them unsung heroes because they were not well known, but they were, you know, and many of them, not all, but many of them were, became quite wealthy, but then they died poor because in their later years in the 50s and 60s, when photography came about, you know, they started losing their jobs, you know, they quit, lost, you know, clients, and the ones who didn't shift into a fine art type category, they still, you know, stayed with cartoons or in that manner. And they just, you know, they didn't, of course they were much older too, you know, cause a lot of them started one in 1910, and many of them were, you know, they were World War One, you know, artists. They, a lot of them got jobs for, you know, in the creating propaganda posters and, you know, and so, what struck me, I don't know if you two remember when I was, after we had completed the course, and of course, Paul Klein had part of the course, he would have a one-on-one session. Well, with my first one-on-one session and preparing for my session, he asked me, he said, do you know how to draw? Because I always said I wanted to create art that was related to my old time radio. And I said, yeah, it's been years since I draw. He said, okay, I want you to create 15 sketches for me. 15, either pencil or pen and ink, however you want, but of based on the various old time radio programs. So I said, wow, okay, that's a bit of a challenge. And of course, I only had like, 3 weeks or so before we were going to, you know, schedule a session. And I don't know if you remember, Diane, I think I showed a couple of them. Yeah. And Paul Michik, paid me the best compliment ever. And then later Paul Klein backed up that compliment. He said, you know what? You see, your style reminds me a lot of like, James Montgomery Flagg or the early illustrators. And for me, that was the greatest compliment ever, because when I was a kid, I always liked, you know, those illustrations in the magazines, you know, different magazines. And in high school, our art teacher actually brought in several images of, they were prints of James M. Flagg's, James Montgomery Flagg's, work and some of the others, and we were to use those as reference. We had a copy to be able to create. Yeah. So when I picked up the pen and pencil and started doing sketches, I still had that in my mind, evidently, because I didn't realize what I was doing until they were done, you know? And then when Paul mentioned that, wow. And then whenever Paul Klein looked at the illustrations, and his purpose of having me do it was he wanted to see if I could draw. There's no sense in proposing some kind of a strategy if you can't draw. But he said, that's not bad. He said, some artists can draw and some artists can't. Some artists can paint better than others. So His purpose was to see what skill level, since I wanted to do illustrations based on the old time radio. So that's what he wanted to see. And he said, you know, these look a lot like the early illustrators, like, James Montgomery Flagg. And I just about fell over. That's the greatest compliment ever. So when I was watching some of these videos and they were talking about these illustrators, it's for me, a lot of those guys, you know, when I do an illustration, and especially for my pulp radio art illustrations, it is in that vignette style, as they call it. You know, it just, it's automatic for me. I don't even think about it. I just end up, you know, doing it that way. And because those guys, you know, have influenced me, you know, so much. Diane, do you have any particular artist you think that influences your work or?
Not necessarily. I've had different ones at different times in like artistic career, I guess. Because initially I was doing a lot of intaglio work and printmaking. And I really like Dürer, German, Albrecht Dürer, his work. But then later when I got into painting, I was really interested in Cézanne's work. But nowadays, I don't know, now I have a lot of different favorites of living artists now, I guess, but not that anybody has really influenced my work, but I've picked up bits and pieces of different things from different people as I've seen them work on like videos or whatever. So I don't have anybody, necessarily one person.
Constance, what about you? Can you think of any particular artist?
One of my favorite, and I know this, everybody has this, but not everybody but I like Van Gogh and I like Cézanne, Picasso, and what is the one guy who did all the drip paintings? What is his name?
Pollock,
yeah, Jackson Pollock. I also, Albert Bernstein. When I was younger, I really liked him. Because I just, the vastness of his paintings just really impressed me, you know, because they were just humongous. I've seen his work in Atlanta, you know, when they had the Olympics there, they had a special show at the art museum of paintings from all around the world. And then his painting was there. He was one of the people, the paintings were just, it was so nice to go through that museum and see all of those wonderful works.
Yeah, I mean, years ago I had seen Monet, like the water lilies and all that.
Yeah,
and those paintings are huge.
Yeah, they
have no
are.
Idea how big they are. Look at them in books or, you know, something. But they're humongous. In room size, they're huge.
Yeah.
And sometimes you see an artist that you like in a art book or something, and then you go to see their actual exhibit of the actual work, and you're really surprised by the size of the painting. Sometimes they're tiny, like the Mona Lisa is real tiny.
Yeah, I was shocked about Mona Lisa too.
You would think it's, you know, a bigger painting, but it's
not. I saw the Mona Lisa in Paris at the Paris, the Louvre. Yeah. We went over there when I was 16, and we went through the Louvre, and I mean, you can go there every day for a month, I think, and you probably wouldn't see everything that was there. It was really cool.
Yeah.
We did make sure we went to see the Mona Lisa.
There's other painters like Savoy.
Oh my gosh, I thought this, you know, you're just awestruck at the fact that it's not any bigger than it is, you know, and they said he worked on it for forever. So I don't feel bad about working on a painting forever anymore.
Well, that's like, in my case, you know, illustrators, influence, but when I started painting and everything, of course, Caravaggio definitely influences, you know, and the chiaroscuro, you know, technique.
Yeah, I like that.
Then, you know, some of the others, like I like Van Gogh, but the thing about, I've never tried to paint like Van Gogh.
I was painting like that for a while. I had to quit it.
You know, so there's, you know, and that's the same way with Caravaggio. I never really tried to paint like Caravaggio until recently, you know, about the last year or so when I, you know, and in fact, my oldest daughter, cause she likes Caravaggio, cause being Italian there. And I've had the opportunity to stand before a couple of his paintings when I was in Italy, and it's just amazing, you know, you mentioned gigantic. Yeah. He's got the one is called the Seven Sins or something. It's in a church in Naples, and it's just giant, you know, big, full, you know,
just mural size.
Yeah. My daughter, challenged me cause we were talking, she said, well, you like Caravaggio, why don't you do a Caravaggio painting? So my painting that I called the Doubting Thomas, that's the one I picked, but I painted it in his style, but it wasn't like his exactly, but it had, you know, some of the, definite qualities. It was, I did that. It was in acrylic. And, at the same time, I went ahead and I took pictures as I progressed. And then I put those into a video and I sent that to my daughter, my daughter was just flabbergasted. Oh my God, that is so. she didn't challenge me anymore. After
that. Yes. When I was in college, I mean, we had to go to the museums and copy paintings. Mm-hmm. I did some of that, but I never really tried to paint in a style of, you know, my own paintings in somebody else's style. But, you know, I guess I picked up things that I learned from doing those copies, yeah. But it was kind of internalized, I guess, and not really conscientious about it.
In my case, it's not intentional, but when I'm painting and when I'm working, it comes through. So that's when I said, I asked about influence, artists that influence you, because I think all of us were influenced by other artists without probably consciously realizing it until after the piece is done. And it usually takes somebody else to tell us. You know, another observer said, hey, that looks like a Caravaggio. Hey, that looks like a James M. Flagg. Hey, that, you know, and then you look at it and you say, well, I'll be darned. Yeah, you're right. Because that's like with the Caravaggio, chiaroscuro style. I admired and looked at a lot of his works, but I never did, especially in my religious paintings. I don't intentionally, but then it comes through, and everything. And with the brush strokes, he has a really fine brush stroke, because I think we even talked about this video where we didn't realize it, but during that time they had all round brushes. They didn't have the flats, that we do now. It wasn't the impressionists, that came about, that brought about the flat brushes. And so that's why a lot of the really Renaissance paintings, they're all very smooth, and you don't necessarily see the brush strokes, so you can see the brush strokes in my painting. So
I like texture in the paintings.
Yeah. So I do, I add some texture. So they're not 100% like.
Yeah. And some of that might be from like years ago, like, the paints were very expensive, and the minerals and things that they were made out of were extremely expensive, and some of them were even rare. So they had to use really thin layers, probably a lot of the time to, make the paint go as far as they could make it go.
Yeah. But,
and then with the, they use a glazing technique, which is, color over color, very thin layer of color and medium over, they built it up, which is how they got the rich flesh tones and the rich, the three-dimensional, look. And that is, I have experimented with that. I've tried that, and it's really hard. It's really, really I haven't been as successful as I would like, with it. But
it takes practice. You have to think in layers instead of thinking on the surface. And most people don't think that way. So you have to really train yourself to think that in that way.
Yeah, be patient. You gotta let it dry before you
apply. Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Okay. Before we wrap up, let's share some of our favorite 4th of July memories. You want to start out, Diane? You got any particular?
Years ago, I used to do a lot of horseback riding, so I rode in the parades every year for years.
Oh gosh!
Yeah, so we had to, walk the whole length of the parade.
You were the horse lady, huh? On your horse walking to, yeah. Did you have a cowboy hat on? And
yeah, I had the whole my gear.
With the skirt and everything, huh?
Mm-hmm. I didn't have spurs, but I had my chaps and my cowboy hat and all that. Cool. I had the Western. That's what I usually did, Western.
Constance, what about you?
I remember we used to go to my sister's for the 4th of July when they lived on the creek. And we would shoot off fireworks from their dock. and everybody would come in their boats and hang out while and watch them.
That's what it's like here. Cool.
That was pretty
cool. Live by the water. Everybody does them over the water, and the towns do them over the water.
So that was fun. We shoot off quite a bit of fireworks.
I have tons and tons, but one, I don't know why this year in particular, why this memory has come back. For me, what I consider one of my best Fourth of July celebration was when I was in the Navy and I was stationed on a ship in the Persian Gulf in 87. This was before, because like a couple years later, you know, the first Persian Gulf War, you know, broke out. But we were, unbeknownst to the media or whatever, or at least they didn't seem to mention something about it, we were in a war before the actual war. Both the Iranians and the Iraqis were trying to shoot us. And we spent a lot of times our operations dodging mines that the Iranians would put out in advance. And also they had these high speed boats that they would fill up with explosives and try to ram us. In fact, they did successfully ram the USS Cole a year after I had left. But on my ship, we were a command ship. We had an admiral on board, and we always had two frigates that are destroyers that were our escorts when we went out. So they were always, so we were well protected, but they still flew over us and got too close. So we'd go to general quarters and sometimes we'd have to shoot at them to scare them off. And it was a pretty scary situation. I mean, it was very, very scary there. And, on 4th of July that year, the admiral and the captain decided that the crew, we were beaten up pretty bad and, you know, and pretty nervous. They determined a small section of the Persian Gulf that was safe, and they parked the ship. They anchored the ship there. Our two escort ships were nearby, also were patrolling, and we had what we call a still beach party. We had a helicopter deck, you know, pad. And so they pulled out barbecue grills, several grills. And we had, you know, barbecued chicken and steak and hot dogs and french fries. The ship's band set up and played.
That's cool.
That's pretty neat.
And that was our 4th of July celebration. They made sure that everybody got off duty in time. It started at 6 o'clock in the morning and ran until after midnight, you know, kept everything. Mm-hmm. We get a chance to go out and have some food and enjoy the company of their, you know, of the shipmates. And of course we had the crews of our two escorts. They came over and joined us. They rotated, you know, so they still had to, we still had guys on machine gun, 50 caliber machine guns, you know, manning their, you know, and they would, somebody would take a plate you know, food over to them. So they could, and it was that very brief. And it, for me, it really emphasized the importance of, you know, even, you know, and it connected us with our previous veterans, you know, of wars, that even in time of war, you know, we have to celebrate, we have to remember our holidays, and especially the 4th of July. It's a very,
our independence,
very, very important thing for, you know, for your military veterans. It also, because I mean, up to that time, up before that period, I used to, I never understood sometimes with some veterans why they didn't like fireworks or whatever. And, you know, the sound of fire. And up to that time, I always enjoyed, you know, as a kid, I grabbed firecrackers, you know, played, and I never thought anything about it. But after having served there and having been there and been under that stress and in a war zone, now I truly appreciate when doggies and veterans don't necessarily like fireworks. There's a reason.
It's PTSD. Yeah, it can be rough.
I do not enjoy fireworks like I used to before there. In fact, my wife noticed that when I came back and the first 4th of July celebration in the, Naples area or whatever back, I didn't go to when the fireworks started. I went home and she didn't understand. I had to, kind of explain to her. I said, because it sends when I hear it going off and I hear the banging and the booming sound, it's literally sends goose pimples up my arms. I mean, I start getting real nervous, so that's my 4th of July, celebration. it hit home. All the other celebrations I'd ever experienced in my life, that particular one, it all made sense. It made sense why we celebrate the 4th of July. It is so critical and so, so important. So that's my story.
And you're sticking to it. Yeah. That sounded pretty special, though.
What'd you say?
It seemed pretty special that the Admiral did that for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was special because, they made sure it was a safe area so we could have at least 24 hours. Because the very next day, we went back to our regular operations. And as we didn't the next day, in the middle of the day, we ended up having to go to GQ because some Iraqi plane was headed toward us and it was coming too close. And something, of course, I worked in communications, so we always had the speakers on. We could hear the communication going back and forth between the ship, the other ships. And when we would hear the command, birds on the rail, that got serious. That meant that our escort ships had armed their missiles and all they needed the command was fire. That's the next command. So
we're on the ready.
I frequently heard birds on the rail frequently. It was like, oh no, here we go. Yeah. But I was there for a year. It was only a year tour. So I was there for a year. And then it was in 1990 or 91 when the first Persian Gulf War full war broke out. But this was, this was in 86 and 87 and 88. We were in war, but it wasn't technical, it was like, we were there, being shot at, being, it's not fun when somebody's shooting at you and you can't necessarily.
No, it's not. I wouldn't think it would be.
So for that, let's wrap up this episode of the Artist Friends Podcast, episode 154 for July the 4th, 2022. And I will say goodnight to Diane and Constance. I'll let Diane say goodnight to everybody.
Goodnight, Clyde. Goodnight, Constance. Goodnight, everyone. And happy 4th of July.
Good night, Clyde. Good night, Diane. Good night, y'all. Thanks for listening. Happy 4th of July.
Thank you so much, folks, for listening. And as always, if you enjoy these podcasts, please, however you find us, give us a star rating and a thumbs up. Until next week, bye-bye.
The Artist Friends Podcast is produced and edited by Clyde J. Kale. Participating artists, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson and Clyde J. Kale. You can find more information about Diane Hunt at www.dianehuntstudio.com. Constance Bronson at www.etsy.com/shop/CBROSNANS. Clyde J. Kale at www.cjkaleartworks.com. If you would like to participate or appear as a guest on the Artist Friends Podcast, please email cjkale@ mystery-otr.com. If you enjoy these podcasts, please give us a thumbs up or a star rating. And most of all, send us your comments. This podcast is issued under the Creative Commons license.